Hi, I'm Roy Spencer of PermaSeal. For over 45 years, we've helped over 500,000 homeowners make their homes drier, healthier, and more valuable. Our warranties are transferable and estimates are free. Call 800-421-SEAL or visit permaseal.net.
Hey, Reg, how are you doing, my friend? All set? Very good, sir. All right. Microphone's where it's supposed to be. We're already ahead of the game. All right, what do you say? In the mood to create a little magic? A little podcast magic? All right. Me too. let me just, you know, get my fingers ready. You know, this is a sleight of hand. This whole podcast is a magic trick, right? All right, are you ready to go? Let's do this thing. Put it in the books, number 441. Get ready. I'm just going to throw this at you, okay? Star, smile, strong, 3, 2, 1. Hey, it's Elton Jim Toronto, and this is Captain Podtastic. And welcome to another episode of Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. Every Monday, a new episode is posted at WGNRadio.com or wherever you go to find your favorite podcast. We are there. Where else would we be? Now, don't forget, listening, major, major, important part of this entire setup here. You being here every week listening to the podcast, very important. But right there, a close second, is also a little effort on your side. Get out there, tell your friends, tell your family, tell anyone who listens to a podcast on a regular basis that your favorite podcast is Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. And by gosh, it should be theirs too. And that loyalty and devotion, oh, especially as we're approaching the holiday season, oh, it feels even better. And the Grinch's heart, how many times did the Grinch's heart grow? Look that up. Google that. Of course, if you'd like what you hear, don't forget, you can always go to WGNRadio.com, go to the podcast section, hit the prompt for this podcast, and you'll be getting what you're looking for. Podcast after podcast. Scroll down, load more. Keep listening. Like right now, keep listening. To episode 441. 441. So here we are. Can you believe that it has been 4 years since we voted in the last presidential election? I'll tell you, it is. I don't know if it's just me getting older, but man, the years do go by fast. That's been 4 years? Wow. 4 years since COVID. I mean, think of it that way, because that's really when that was the major, in addition to the election in 2020, presidential election, we also were in the midst of COVID. We were about 6 or 7 months in, if you think about it. COVID really officially became a global, certainly a national epidemic in March of 2020. And then here we are, we were in November, voting for a new president in the midst of that. What a wild time that was. Presidential candidates wearing masks, picking and choosing their campaign stops. Many, I can't even remember now. I know that, Joe Biden did a lot of campaigning as a lot of his critics complained, from the basement, but it was a necessity. I can't remember in 2020 if Donald Trump went out as much. Donald Trump did get COVID at least once, I remember, not maybe even twice, definitely once. I remember them showing a big rose garden event. Don't forget, he was still president at the time. And he wasn't wearing a mask. He sort of made a big effort to show that he would not wear a mask, which probably, in my view, probably lost him the election, ironically. It was such a crazy time, and it was a close election. And I think that, you know, in the midst of COVID, now don't forget, by December, just a month after the election, we did have a vaccine, which was a pretty amazing accomplishment to have developed a vaccine so quickly, considering what a surprise this COVID virus was. But my point is that the mask became such a political symbol. It wasn't just a health symbol anymore. A mask became politicized. If you wore a mask, you were viewed as a liberal Democrat who was afraid and was kowtowing to this. And if you didn't wear a mask, you were a brave Republican who wasn't going to let the government tell you what to do. It was a weird time where health and politics was meshing. And don't get me wrong, health and politics do mesh. Healthcare, abortion, certainly, and women's healthcare rights. I get that. But when something as would be considered simple as your daily health becomes politicized, I think that was something different. Health and health care in a bigger sense has always been politicized, especially in the last 50 years with the Roe v. Wade decision and the rising costs of health care and things like that. There's no question. Health and health care is a political issue in today's world. But your day-to-day health would seem to, on its face, would have seemed to be above the political fray. We're talking about personal health, personal life and death, vaccines to help you if you are sick. You know, we go to the doctor every day. We take vitamins every day. I mean, we don't go to the doctor every day. We go to the doctor. We take vitamins every day. We take some daily medications, perhaps, for ailments we have. Those same doctors, this is what I always find interesting. When people were anti-vax, still are, but, I mean, so did the people that didn't get vaccinated, did they stop taking their blood pressure pills, which a doctor prescribed? Did they stop taking their chemotherapy if they had cancer, which a doctor prescribed? You know, I mean, did they stop taking their Jardiance? I mean that was the odd dichotomy of this, is that there was this this politicized vax, anti-vax, and yet those who were anti-vax, Donald Trump, who was, he didn't seem to be very clear on this. This is my point. I think if he would have worn a mask and just said, "Look, folks, we have to be healthy here. We have to do what we can do to stop the spread of this disease." I think that toward the end of that campaign, at the end of the day, there was still such an uncertainty about the disease. There was a fear about it. Well, how long was this going to last? It was decimating our economy. It was changing our social patterns. It was affecting education. It was affecting every aspect of people's lives. We were hunkered down for many months, which people weren't happy with. So there, you know, it became politicized, and so there was a real fear. And I think that toward the end of the campaign, a lot of people voted against Trump because they may have voted for him. But I think that he was presenting this image that don't worry about this COVID thing, it'll go away. And certainly, ultimately, it did go away, like every virus does. But I think there was a real fear or a real apprehension of when and how. And so he was putting up this front of don't worry about it, whereas Biden was talking about we've got to be concerned about this. At the same time, while Trump was putting on a very stoic kind of don't worry about it, he was also developing the vaccine, which he should get credit for. Whether you like Donald Trump or not, he should get credit because under his administration, in less than a year, a vaccine to fight this virus was available, which people thought it might take 18 months or 2 years to develop, and it was less than 7 or 8. So there was a lot of mixed messages, and I think there was a fear and uncertainty, which was understandable. And I think that if Donald Trump would have just worn a mask instead of trying to be macho and bold, those people on the fence who may have been maybe Trump supporters but felt that he was being a little frivolous on this COVID thing because it was the issue of that election. No two ways about it. We were in the midst of a global epidemic, and we being the United States, we in many ways are the example for the world. And many people, especially parents, were concerned about not only themselves, but their children and the impact that an elongated epidemic would have on, as I said before, not only the health of their children, but on the mental health of their children, on the education of their children. And Biden seemed to be offering more of an empathetic view as opposed to Donald Trump. I think if he just would have worn a mask, he would have sent a message to perhaps those people that were a little afraid, a little apprehensive, even though it was pretty much understood that with time, all viruses, you know, peak and then they max out. Now, the question was, when would this max out? And so that's why a vaccine was developed to mitigate this. And we've seen COVID now, 4 years later, come back, not as big as it was initially. But now we do have updated vaccines that may be helping. I mean, I've been vaxxed every time. As I've said many times here, I trust doctors. I trust policemen, firemen, and doctors. I don't know where we'd be without all three of them. And so they know more than I do. And they are braver than I am. And so I am appreciative of the job that they do and the service that they provide. And so, I got the latest COVID shot back in September, and I've gotten every booster, every shot there is. Got my flu shot. I trust medicine. I trust, as I said, if I were not to get the vaccine, then I should stop taking my blood pressure medication. the same institutions, the same doctor that prescribes my prescriptions for my blood pressure also suggested that I get a flu shot. So if I trust this doctor on the medication for my blood pressure, I would think that I would also trust that doctor on the advice to get a COVID shot. I think it just makes sense. I don't understand how you can pick one and the other. But as I said, the politicized aspect of COVID broke through all logic for many people. But as I said, here we are 4 years later. And okay, now we get a COVID shot just like we get a flu shot. It's a reoccurring virus. It probably will be with us for many, many years. But hopefully not in the epidemic fashion that it was when we had no defense against it. But anyway, my point is here we are 4 years later. And that was a fast 4 years. And I guess every 4 years is getting faster and faster. And so here we are. This podcast will be posting on the day before Election Day on November 3rd. And so I think I would be remiss if I didn't at least, acknowledge what this week will be. Because by the time we talk next week, it's going to be very interesting. Today's podcast is the calm before the storm, because what happens next week, we cannot right now even pretend to predict. This could be a very close race. This could be a landslide on either side. When you see the polls this close, the polls could be very accurate, and this thing could be going on for several days because votes need to be counted, or, as happens in many cases, the polls could be completely wrong on either side. Don't forget, in 2016, the night before the election between Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton, the question wasn't if Hillary Clinton was going to win. The question was, could Hillary Clinton potentially win 40 or 45 states of the 50 states? That's how big of a lead the polls showed Hillary Clinton having the night before the election, not a week before, not a month before, the night before. The question was not, would Hillary Clinton win to become the first female president? The question was, how big of a landslide was it going to be? And of course, we all know what happened. And 4 years later in 2020, it was a very close election. In some people's minds, they still, including the president or the former president, don't seem to accept, at least publicly, who won the last election. That's how close it was. So here we are again. That was a very, as I said before, I think COVID made that one of the most unique presidential elections until this year. If you thought 2020 was a unique presidential campaign and presidential election because of what COVID was doing to the country and the world, and it also affected how people campaigned, and it really affected what people were focused on in terms of the issues. The issue, there was only one issue in that campaign. It was COVID, pure and simple. And if you want to, and so that looked like a unique campaign, like, wow, I mean, that's a once in a generation kind of campaign that is done in the shadow of a global epidemic that hadn't happened in 100 years or so. Well, that was true until about 3 or 4 months ago when the sitting president, the incumbent president, who decides to run for re-election, who wins the Democratic primaries, going away uncontested for the most part, because of one revealing national debate, which revealed what most people knew in terms of his mental capacity and how it was declining, and how the possibility of another 4 years, we would have a very serious situation on our hands. It was, even though it was the powers that be were trying to mask that as much as possible, they couldn't. And so here we are, literally 2 or 3 months before the election, a couple of months before the Democratic convention, what, maybe even a month before. And we've got a new candidate, unprecedented, a sitting president who was the unanimous Democratic primary winner, uncontested for the most part, on his way to the convention to be ordained the Democratic candidate, and suddenly was forced to step down. And very quickly, without much debate at all, his vice president, Kamala Harris, was quickly inserted into that spot. There wasn't a great debate amongst many possible contenders, as many thought there were. They would say, well, there was a lot of talk that after the disastrous debate again with Trump and Biden, and Biden's disastrous performance, which called into question his mental capacity and his ability not only to serve perhaps now, but certainly to serve another 4 years, and put that in his entire candidacy in jeopardy. But part of the reason that many thought he couldn't or shouldn't drop out was that you would throw the candidacy in disarray a few months before the election, because there'd be, who would become the new nominee, and how would we decide who the nominee is? What process would we have? Obviously, there's going to be several people throwing their hats in the ring, and so how are we going to decide? Because the primaries are over, and is there going to be a brokered convention? There were all these scenarios being thrown around, and all these potential candidates who were going to throw their hat in the ring. And within a day and a half or 2 days, it was pretty much settled. Vice President Harris was the new nominee. Boom. Not much discussion. So it's been a very interesting presidential campaign, in many cases, even more interesting than you would have thought. The last one was in the midst of a worldwide epidemic. That's crazy enough, but we had both two assassination attempts on one candidate in one party, and on the other party, the presumed and primary winning candidate steps down within a month or two of the election, and suddenly a new candidate who only has 2 or 3 months to campaign and make a case is the new nominee. So, yeah, I think on its face, this presidential campaign may have already topped the uniqueness of the last one, which seemed like it was a crazy campaign. But it seems like chaos these days is the way we do business, isn't it? There is such an instability in the world. There is such a tumult in the world. I've been talking about this for several years, and it seems to be coming to a head, but I fear it isn't. I mean, now we have two wars happening in the world. It was bad enough we had one. Now we have two that seemingly have no end in sight. The Russian-Ukraine war has taken a back seat but it's still on. It might not have the attention of the world as it did a year and a half ago, but it certainly is still going on. It's only been overcome in attention now that with the Israeli-Hamas war, and that's a year, more than a year old. And that is showing no signs of ending. So we've got two quagmire wars going on. We thought one was bad for the last couple of years. I would think, I don't even know how many times we've, I mean, these aren't, this isn't considered a world war, right? I mean, in reality, the biggest powers or the biggest countries in the world are not involved, which would, I guess, define what a world war is. But to have two wars going on involving major countries happening at the same time, and not even close to seemingly being started. I mean, wow. What are we doing? And don't forget, I mean, it's been over 2 years. I think February will be 3 years since the Russian invasion of Ukraine. And we're over a year now in the Israeli-Hamas war. So it seems like chaos is not just relegated to the United States. Things are crazy here. We've had crazy weather catastrophes striking Florida, North Carolina, and several areas, and the wildfires again. So we've had like crazy weather things. We've had crazy things in the business world, and then wars. I mean, I don't know. It just seems, and every day with the constant drumbeat of social media on just a variety of things. It seems like chaos now is the norm. And amidst all that, we're voting for a president. And so what I guess my main message today would be that amidst all the chaos, amidst all the uncertainty, amidst all the unstableness around the world and in this country, and even perhaps in your neighborhood where you live, who knows? And the divisiveness in this country, and the gray line between what is acceptable anymore? We don't even know. Our barometer is going in all different directions. It's a very, very complex time. I don't even know why someone would want to be president. I mean, the next president, whoever it is going to walk into a crap show, right? Pardon the language. I mean, this is not, we've got, regard, I know we, you know, we're hearing about all these positive economic indicators, as they say, but the fact of the matter is, regardless of what the official statistics say, when people go to the grocery store, when people go to any retail store, when people go anywhere where they're dealing with consumer prices, they are higher than they have been. I mean, gas now, I couldn't believe this. I was just in California, Nevada. I was right on the border, went to Lake Tahoe. It's right on the border of California and Nevada, so you can't help but go from one to the other if you're traveling around the area. Now, here in the Chicago area, gas is varying in price between like $3.20, $3.60, $3.70, $3.80. I mean, that's where it's kind of been. Every so often, it's been hitting four and then $4.05, $4.20, I think it was a couple of months ago. Then it came back down. Right now, at least from when I'm talking to you today, gas is about $3.65, $3.49, wherever you might go, $3.75, something like that. Still very high. You know, we're used to gas being more like $2 a gallon. But my gosh, driving through California and Nevada, the gas prices were $6 a gallon. $6 a gallon. That's the norm there. $6 a gallon. That's almost more than, you know, depending on what it is here on a given day, but that's like twice as high. And we're in Illinois here complaining about the price of gas. I don't know about you. I do a lot of the grocery shopping in our house, and you can spend $50 now at the grocery store, and basically, with the taxes and everything, if you're lucky, you have 10 or 11 items, and you could spend $50. And depending on the size of the items, there's a chance that you could spend $50 at the grocery store, and that all could fit in one bag, especially if it's a paper bag. Those plastic bags, I mean, those things don't hold anything. Although I make them hold it, I still am a master bagger. In fact, when I was just recently in Lake Tahoe, and we went to the grocery store, and it's the same everywhere. When I go to my local grocery store, there is such a move to push everybody to the checkout counters, self-checkout, I should say, that they basically force you to go to the self-checkout because they don't have any live cashiers. They have one. They have six. Most, you know, I mean, when these grocery stores were built, many of them have at least six aisles, if not more. And they used to have a lot more, and they've converted many of their aisles into self-checkout aisles. So basically, even if you see a store now that has six checkout aisles, which should be manned by a cashier, most likely when that store was built, or even 4 or 5 years ago, they probably had 10 or 11, at least 10. And they've converted many of much of the space of some of those checkout aisles that used to be manned by a cashier into self-checkouts. But even with six remaining aisles, which is the store that I go to, has six remaining aisles, they have one cashier. So they're basically forcing you, unless you don't want to wait in a long line, unless you don't want to wait in a line that drags into the floral department, then you sort of break down and go, well, I guess I'll go to the self-checkout. And that's how they get you. From my point of view, I'm going to the cashier. And it's not about just the idea of, well, you know, I want to keep somebody employed, because they clearly don't want to. But my point is, if I'm going to have to bag my own groceries, then I better be getting 50 cents off on everything else. I shouldn't have to bag my own groceries at the checkout, at the self-checkout, and still pay the same price. If I'm paying a higher price, I'm assuming that I'm helping to pay the salary of that cashier. But if you're not going to have me go to a cashier, then I think your prices should be lower. If I go to the self-checkout, then you know what? And I'll tell you, here's a free idea to any grocery store that wants to get an advantage. You say, if you go to the self-checkout, we will give you a 5% or maybe even a 10% discount on your final bill. But if I guarantee you, if you told people that they could get a 10% discount with the same groceries that they bought, if they just went to the self-checkout that they did to a manned checkout, I guarantee you the people would be at that self-checkout. But right now, you're giving me no incentive except for potential speed. Like I have to wait in line. Well, you know what? I'm going to wait in line because if you're not going to give me a discount and I have to bag my own groceries, then I'm going to wait in the line and have somebody check it out for me and bag my own groceries. But if you want to give me incentive to say, hey, you know what? If you want to use the self-checkout, whatever your final your tally is, what your final total is, boom, we'll give you 5% off right off the top, or 10% off right off the top. You watch how many people would go. I would. But if it's the same thing, I'm sorry. Then I'm gonna be served here. I'm not going to serve myself for no incentive. Take that to the bank, grocery stores. If you're trying to drive people to the self-checkout, it's just not about speed. In today's world, it's about prices. You give me a break, and I'll go to your self-checkout. But if not, then I'm going to have somebody check my, you know, check out my items and also bag them. Now, at the same time, as I said, if I have to be put into action to bag some groceries, I will. We were in one of the big grocery stores in the Tahoe area, and the cashier said, "Oh, there's no bagger." she had quite the inviting personality. "Well, there's no bagger." I mean, that's just how she said it. "Yeah, we don't have a bagger." So, Jimmy on the spot, if you will, I went back there and I said, "That's all right. Let's go. I'll bag it. Send it down. Let's go." And I even used the paper bags. It just brought me back to my days of bagging groceries at Jewel. I was double bagging. I still had it. I hadn't bagged in a long time. And I opened the first bag, and then I had the little lip of the second bag in my fist, and I shoved it in there and opened it up, and boom, instant double bag. And then here we are, and I'm taking those cans, and I'm taking that stuff, and I'm flipping it from my left hand to my right, and I'm putting it in there. And people were watching me. Even the woman said, "Wow, put this guy to work." And you know what? The bags were evenly divided. They were well distributed. They weren't heavy. Nothing broke. And I'm like, that's how you bag a grocery. I mean, today, I don't even know what's going on. I don't even know if they teach people how to bag groceries. It's almost like once again, this is just my own little theory. But because prices have gone up so much, and I would assume the plastic bags are cheaper than the paper bags, I think this either the current baggers have been given no guidance or no training on how to bag, whether it's a paper bag or certainly a plastic bag. Either they've been given no training whatsoever, or, here's my theory, they've actually been instructed to give people more bags than they should to put less things in more bags. And you say, Jim, what's the advantage of that? Well, as I said to you before, depending on the size of your items, for $50, which I still think $50 is a lot of money. Maybe I'm crazy. I still think $50 is a lot of money. If you get, like, for instance, so if I were to bag something and I could probably get everything in one bag, depending on the size, two at the most. Say for a $50 order, which is sad in today's world, but it's true. Most things that you buy right now are $5. Peanut butter, four something. three yogurts, three for five. Everything's $5. So you maybe get 10 items if you're lucky. If you're lucky. But when you see, I mean, I don't know about you, but when you go to the grocery store, when you put together your items, you have in your mind like, oh, well, this, I didn't buy too much today. This shouldn't be that expensive. And then boom, $50, $55, $60. You're like, wow. And then I look in my cart and my cart is filled with bags, 10 bags. And then I get to my car to unload them and I see, because I'm not watching the bagging process, and then I see what I got here in my cart. And I've got 10 bags that could easily be incorporated into two. And I'm not lying. Okay, I don't know if you know it, you'll know what I'm talking about. Okay, so there's like this little bag of Lindor chocolate balls, right? There's like maybe 10 chocolate balls in this little bag that is like a triangle. It I don't even know how much it weighs. It can't even weigh a pound. Okay, that should certainly be in a bag with several other items, is my point. The thing is small, it's pliable, and it doesn't weigh anything. So that should definitely be bagged or put in a bag with other items. Not when I buy it. That gets its own bag. It's not breakable. It gets its own bag. What are you talking about? A little small, 3 peaches. 3 peaches in the plastic bag that you get at the produce thing gets one bag. It's not put in another bag. What are you talking about? 3 cups of yogurt. 3 plastic cups of yogurt. Its own bag. When I get to my car, I am rebagging my order. And inevitably, I get my order, which may vary in from, say, $50 to $70, maybe $80, depending on some weeks buying something else each visit. But inevitably, I incorporate, because I count how many bags they gave me, because I at this point I can't believe it. But inevitably, I incorporate 10 or 11 bags that I have initially when I leave the store after I've checked out, that they've bagged it for me. I incorporate 10 to 11 bags that they gave me into 2 or 3. Ridiculous. Who wants to carry? I mean, what am I carrying all these bags for? Unbelievable. I don't know. So you say, Jim, how does that get into what we're talking about, the election? Well, it doesn't really. But it's talking about the state of affairs. And my point is, things seem to be all up, all over the place. There's chaos everywhere. And I am surprised that anybody would want to be the next president. That's my view of it right now. You say, Jim, who are you voting for? Well, that's, again, that's a personal decision. But what I'm telling you is, why would anybody want to be president right now? This has got to be one of the most chaotic times to be president. I honestly believe that whoever wins the presidency this year in 2024, we will have a one-term president. Now you say, well, Jim, we know that, right? At least one candidate has to have one term. That's correct. Donald Trump can only serve one term. So we know he is a one-term president. I also believe that whoever becomes, if Kamala Harris wins, I think the next 4 years are going to be so chaotic that I don't care how much you like Kamala Harris and all, whatever. I just don't think, whether it's Kamala Harris or anyone else, I don't think anyone will be able to do a good enough job that in 4 years we will say, stay the course. I think we are in such chaotic times. If this was, and I would say that if it's Donald Trump, if you're a Trump fan, I'll say this was his first term. I just think that we are in such chaotic times. It's right now, the mid-2020s are very similar to the mid-70s. And if you remember back then, we did have several one-term presidents. Now, Nixon won re-election in 72, but he was only president for 2 years because of Watergate, and he resigned. So he did not finish his term. So he was basically, while he was a two-term president in terms of elections, he was really a one-and-a-half-term president. He resigned in August of 74. 2 years into his second term. So I consider Nixon not a two-term president. Yes, he won two elections, but I don't consider him a two-term president. He was a year and a half, he was a term and a half president. And then we had Gerald Ford, who was a half-term president, taking over from Nixon in 74 to 76. And then we had Carter, who was a one-term president from 76 to 80. And before Nixon, we had a one-and-a-half-term president, Lyndon Johnson, who finished JFK's term in 63, won in 64, had his full term. Not even a term and a half. And then he decided not to run in 68. And John F. Kennedy in 60 did not have a full term. So if you think about it, from 1960 to 1980, until Ronald Reagan, who had two terms, 80 and 84, we did not have a full two-term president. And that's why I say, and I say today, right now, we are in as a chaotic time as we were in the 60s and 70s. We are mired in it, if not more, because of social media. And so what has happened since 2016? Trump, one term. Biden now, one term. I think that we are going to see a one-term president again. We know if Trump is, he's going to only have one term. But I believe if Harris wins, the way the world is going, even if she wins, I think that she'll be a one-term president because the world is in such crazy shape that I don't know how the next president is going to be able to navigate all the things that are ahead and have people say, you've done a good job. Now, if Biden were president, we would, or running, we would know that the next president would be a one-term president either way. Biden would have served his second term in a row, and Trump would have, if he wins, would have served his second term with one in between. So we would have known for sure, constitutionally, the next president would have been a one-term president. But what I'm saying is, I just view whoever wins one term, constitutionally, one of the candidates will have one term. But I think realistically, this the world is in such crazy shape that I don't know who would be able to navigate what's coming ahead in the next 4 years. Now you say, wow, Jim, that's a pretty dour prediction. Where's your hope? Where's your joy? Where's your optimism? Well, I've told you many times here, I am a realist. And I'm looking at things from a realist standpoint. And I'm looking at the next 4 years, and I don't see all that much optimism. I see a lot more divisiveness and trouble happening. That's why I said we can't right now, as I'm talking to you, as you're hearing me right now, we don't even know what is happening next week. Next week is going to be crazy one way or the other. If Donald Trump wins, it's going to be crazy because the Democrats are going to be out of their minds. And they will be, believe me, trust me, they will be screaming that the election was not fair. Believe me, for all the high-handed, January 6th kind of arguments, believe me, if it's a close election, Kamala Harris has a good chance to perhaps, just like Hillary Clinton, has a good chance of winning the popular vote, but losing the Electoral College, just like Hillary did to Trump the first time. And if you recall, once again, I'm just talking about realistic and facts. If you recall, yes, Hillary conceded, Trump didn't, but I'm just talking about facts here. But the fact of the matter is, for a good couple of months, Hillary was saying, he's not the legitimate president because I won the popular vote and this electoral college is, antiquated. Go back and see the quotes. Go back and listen to the interviews of Hillary Clinton right after the election. Yes, she conceded, but she also questioned the validity of the election. Yes, she did. Now, she didn't go to the extent that Trump has gone, but I'm just telling you, nobody is without sin here. Nobody's hands are clean. So I guarantee you, whatever side loses, if it's close, they are going to complain about the validity and legitimacy of the election. And yes, the Democrats will too. They're taking a very high moral ground, but I guarantee you their hatred for Trump is so deep that if he wins, they will question it. And hypocrisy be damned. And if Trump loses, we've already seen what Trump voters might do. So as I said, right now, as I speak to you today, the day before the election, to some extent, if you're listening to this on the first day, it's kind of a calm before the storm, because whatever happens after tomorrow night on election day, on November 4th, whatever happens, there's going to be chaos. There's going to be chaos, unless it is, and it could, as I said before, this election is so close in terms of the polling that it can go, it could either fall that way and be very close, or it could be off in the favor of each side. It could either be so close, or it, I think it's not going to be in the middle. I think it's going to be neck and neck, or it's going to be a landslide one way or the other. If you ask me right now who's going to win, I really couldn't tell you. But I can tell you that that's the scenario. It's not going to be close, sort of. It's either going to be razor thin or huge one way or the other. Because there's a lot of polls that that people don't really tell the truth to people one way or the other. I don't know if we can trust the polls. I know the media loves to use them because it's the only way to gauge the horse race, and they love the horse race. But as I said before, in 2016, Hillary Clinton was supposed to win 40 states. Not only did she not win 40 states, she didn't win the election. And the polls were showing a landslide. In 1976, many of you weren't even born, perhaps, or people don't remember, but the Reagan-Carter election was supposed to be very close. Reagan won by 9 o'clock in the evening. It was a landslide. He won almost 50 states. But on election day, the polls were neck and neck. But when people went to the ballot box, it wasn't even close. And so that's where I think we're at right now. The one message that I would say to you is I hope you do vote. In many cases, for a lot of people, we've seen the polls on this, and you can, this might be the only true accurate poll. It was the same with Biden, and it's, I think it's the same with Harris, regardless of the Democratic. I don't think that the American people are happy with any of the candidates, which does not bode well for our next president, one way or the other. Because whoever wins, we're going to be divided again. The next president of the United States, whether it's Kamala Harris or Donald Trump, will only have 50%, if not lower, support. So we're going to be in chaos again. I mean, I would assume if Donald Trump loses, his political career is obviously over. I mean, he would have run now twice and lost, given his age. This is his last hurrah. But whoever wins is not going to have some kind of a mandate. There will be no mandate. Unless it's a landslide. But I don't see it a landslide because I think on one side, because Trump's people come out. They are dyed in the wool. So it depends on how you define landslide, I guess. He always has 40, 45, a 10-point. A 10-point victory is a good victory. It's not a landslide, though. A landslide is like 70-30. 60-40 is close, but 70-30, 80-20, that's a landslide. But we'll see. But I would urge you, whoever you are voting for, Donald Trump, Kamala Harris, I would urge you to vote. Because it is important, even if you don't live in a swing state. I know if you live in some states that are predominantly Democratic or predominantly Republican, you say, what's the difference? My state is going to go for either Trump or Harris based on the amount of Democrats or Republicans in that state, and it's the swing states in this election, like Pennsylvania and Ohio and Michigan and Wisconsin, maybe North Carolina, that may really determine this. And you say, well, if I don't live in any of those, what's the point of me voting? Well, I guess in reality, that might be true. But theoretically, it's important that everybody votes to show that we are engaged, that you care. You might be in a blue state, you might be in a red state. And so your vote is almost, you know, is going to be a washout to some extent. But that doesn't mean that you shouldn't vote, even if your vote necessarily isn't in one of those states that could potentially determine the election. If you don't live in a swing state, you should still vote, because the number of votes counts. The number of votes counts because it shows that we as a nation care, that we are concerned, that we are engaged, and that sends a message to the rest of the world. And we must always be cognizant of that. We are the pace car. We set the tone. We set the pace for the rest of the world. It is true. Now, some countries may say that we shouldn't. That's not the point. We are the richest, most powerful country in the world, and so what we do does matter. And it's not just policies. It's not just foreign relations. It is how we do things. Our example to the rest of the world counts. One reason why things have gotten so chaotic in the world is because things have gotten so chaotic in the United States. We have not shown a good example to the rest of the world. Our divisiveness has not shown a strength and a leadership and an inspiration to the rest of the world, who looks at us to say, well, at least they've got their house in order, so maybe we should try to get our house in order. But when we don't have our house in order, the other countries go, well, if they can't do it, then why? How can we do it? They're the only ones there with some semblance of what's going on. They're our role model, whether they want to admit it or not. They wouldn't admit that, but we are, by just our sheer presence in the world today. We are. They won't admit it, but we are. But when we're divisive, when we're not engaged, when we're chaotic, that sends a message to the rest of the world. And things have a domino effect. And that chaos starts to spread everywhere, because everybody looks to the United States and says, wow, they're so confused. They're divided. What chance do we have? Look at what's going on in the UK. They've had more prime ministers in the last 2 years than they've had in the last 40. It's crazy. England always looked at the UK looked as a very stable ally, stable country. It's in chaos. They've had three prime ministers in the last 2 years. That's like having three presidents in the last 3 years. Think of where we would be if we had three presidents in the last 3 years. What would we be doing right now? But we have sent a message during COVID, because we became so divisive. And as I've said many times, this country has been divided for many years. It wasn't just Trump. It wasn't just COVID. We've been divided for a long, long time. But it became more obvious, and thanks to social media and especially COVID, It exposed it more. It exposed our, and don't forget, we're still living in the wake of 9/11. We still haven't We still haven't recovered from that. We really haven't. It showed a vulnerability to the world and to ourselves. And I'll be honest, I don't think we've ever recovered from that as yet. And it's only contributed that vulnerability and that insecurity contributed to the divisiveness. It's all connected. But COVID really revealed how divided we were on an aspect that you would think would unite people, an epidemic, health, people dying, not because of wars, but because of a health-related virus. You'd think that would have been a uniting factor. And it was a dividing factor. And we sent that message to other countries. And if you noticed, that was happening all around the world. Because, you know, Jim, that's human nature to some extent. Perhaps. But I do believe that we set the tone. And so this election is important, not only for the next 4 years, but the amount of people that vote in this election, the number of votes cast, the percentage of people who are registered voters who voted is an important number. And listen to that number, regardless of who wins. Pay attention to that number. Because that number is important. That number will tell the rest of the world how engaged and concerned the country is. Whether the split on this, whether this is literally a 49.7 to a 50.3 election, or a 49.7 to a 49.3, and whether it's so close it's crazy, or whether it's a landslide one way or the other, the number of votes, the percentage of the registered voters who voted is important, because it sends a message. Yes, if it's a razor thin outcome on either side, then yeah, it will once again prove how divided we are. And there's a good chance of that. But aside from that, at least look at how engaged we are, because that sends a message to the world and to us that we still care. And that's what voting means, ultimately. It's not so much who you voted for, and if they won or lost. Certainly, we're all in the horse race. We get that. But your vote, whether it's by mail or whether you go on election day and vote, it shows you're engaged. It shows you care. It shows you're concerned. It shows you're involved. And that sends a message to the leaders of this country, to your fellow citizens, and to the world. At the very least, if we set a record for the most people who have ever voted in a presidential election, whatever the outcome would be, at least we are telling ourselves that while we may be divided in our views, we are not divided in our loyalty to our country. And the one way, the easiest and most obvious way that we show that we're loyal to our country is to participate in the process. And the one thing that we can do, the easiest thing, the most basic, is to vote. So I hope that you will go out this week and vote, whoever you vote. Your vote might not count necessarily in the grand scheme of who gets elected, but your vote counts in the fact that you're sending a message that you care and that we care about what happens to this country and what happens to this world and what happens to each other. And so ends another episode of Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. Every Monday, a new episode is posted at WGNradio.com or wherever you go to find your favorite podcast. We are there. And don't forget to tell your friends, tell your family, tell anyone who listens to a podcast that your favorite podcast is Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic, and it should be theirs too. Your loyalty and devotion are much appreciated. Hope you enjoyed episode number 441. I'm Jim Tirano. I ain't here on business. I'm only here for fun. You've been listening to Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. From the end of my mind to your ears. Full!